even before mass deportations, the dismantling of Jewish power, or the resurrection of the Führer, if you asked our single guys and gals what's one thing they absolutely want out of life, a supermajority would probably answer a loving wife or husband and a big brood of healthy kids. And we do celebrate and honor our new white lives almost every week on Full House, because like Whitney Houston, we really do believe that children are our future. But what about new white love? Here, too, we've tried our best to give useful advice over the years, welcomed on Chads and Lotharios about cracking the code, and even made a couple love connections. But in a world of rampant degeneracy, drug addiction, obesity, and mental illness, finding the right one and locking him or her down can seem almost as impossible as solving our political problems. So this week, we are honored and delighted to welcome a newly married couple to find out what went down from meeting each other to dating to making the biggest decision of their lives to finally pulling the trigger. In the good sense, of course. They only been married for a short period of time. And as a special bonus, it's Sam's son and newly minted daughter-in-law. So, Mr. Producer, let's go. Welcome, everyone, to Full House, the world's most matrimonial show for white fathers, aspiring ones, and the whole bio fam. It is episode 184, and I am your truly springtime appreciating host, Coach Finstock, back with another 2 hours of bringing you the good word. It was just a spectacular sunny Sunday out there today. Frog marched the kids out the door. I said, this is not a day for tablets or TV or chillin'. So we got vitamin D the old-fashioned way out there, and we'll talk maybe a little bit more about that in the second half. Before we meet the birth panel, though, big thanks to King Charles for his kind support of the show this past week. That's right. He is newly crowned because he now pays simply for production. We put up a show, Charles ponies up. And I do have to say there are a couple thousand freeloaders out there who apparently enjoyed our Greg Conte special last week and left King Charles there holding the bag. So break the cycle of freeloading, you bums. Check us out at givesendgo.com/fullhouse if you'd like to support our efforts. And with that, let's move on to the birth panel. First up, rumor has it that on the glorious day when his first grandchild arrives, he is already ready to give the Lou Gehrig luckiest man in the world speech, hopefully minus the ALS disease, though. Sam, welcome big guy.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah.
You would have come down with it by now if you had that.
Yeah. You know, it is a good thing. And, you know, it's... just the conditions of our world is such that people are getting married later. And of course, as a parent, you're always anxious that you want at least some, if not all of your kids to marry well and have a family of some size and things like that. So very joyful to have them on. And as you mentioned, Coach, about the weather today was really, I would say, our first beautiful, sunny, warm enough day to really be outside, and or I should say yesterday. And so we mowed the lawn for the first time, which made me think of you. Oh. And it's, you know, that first one is always a little rough because it's grown kind of wild in areas and
sticks hiding down there and
rocks and everything. And we unfortunately we left a little pile of or a good sized pile of leaves from last year just because there were so many. We kept filling our yard waste can and then it got cold or snowed or something, then that left that pile and all the grass was dead under it. I guess I didn't think that would happen, you know. But it was a beautiful day. Yeah, like you say, we go on more. We did get we got the basketball net for the first time this year, and then for some reason Callie thought it was quite funny, this game cornhole. I brought out the cornhole game, and for some reason she thought that was very funny. So maybe we could talk about that and some other oddball Americanisms later.
First timer. Yeah. Everybody remembers their first game of cornhole for sure. I'm sure that's she will too. And you know, it occurred to me, Sam, I fired up the Cub Cadet today. I was out there cruising the emerald seas of grass. And I thought, you know, everybody thinks, oh, you know, getting married and having healthy kids is certainly a key element in having a successful life, sort of proof of concept. And then I thought, nah, you know what? It's you're really not truly a success until you have grandchildren, right? Because that means that you not only did you have kids, but your kids had kids, and you can. It's not just about going to the grave with a little bit of satisfaction, but you know, the continuation of your line past your own kids. So fingers crossed for you there, big guy.
Yes, indeed.
We'll see if Junior here can get it going soon. Anyway, next up, he is not just our number one most eligible and worthy bachelor. He is also now for sure our longest running and most resolute skilled producer, the man I affectionately call Rolito. Welcome back, buddy.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Give us some good news. Anything you got?
I saved a ton of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
Did you really?
No, but isn't that the joke from that commercial? Give me some good news.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't.
Yeah.
Make a connection with the good news thing. You know, I recently got the updated, you know, 6 month auto insurance policy, and it was not insanely higher, but it was definitely higher than what it was. And I haven't taken out any deer lately, so I shopped around, and nobody could beat it because I'm already in the like multi policy. Long time policy holder. So I did that pain in the ass of shopping around and doing apples to apples. Couldn't save anything. So thank you, Rolo. Go ahead, Tim.
I was just going to say, I did that same thing. You know, once you got like four vehicles and a house all on the same policy, you know, these other insurance salesmen can be very aggressive, and they will come in saying, oh, I can save you this much and that much. And I just say, I don't think so, you know?
Yep. I tried doing the stuff online, and it just was not necessarily user-friendly. So I actually just popped into like a mom and pop insurance agency with all the different companies that they service. And so they couldn't help me on auto insurance, but the homeowner's insurance, major savings, and not by going with a Mickey Mouse company, keeping the policy pretty much the same. So if you're out there and everybody's insurance is going up, auto, home insurance, but just pop into a place right off the street. I called them. They're like, no, we don't need a reservation or whatever. Just come on in. And a guy was very friendly and is going to save us more than $1,000 on our
owners. Well, maybe I should look into it. It's been some years since I actually had somebody price it out, but that's not a bad idea.
Yeah. Ours went up like $1,000 last year, and I was like, oh, that's the market. And then it went up $1,000 again this year. And that's claim. So I was like, all right, right. Our special guests are like, you guys shut up. Come on. Yeah. My bad. And next up, overjoyed for I think it's gotta be the first time that we've had a Full House regular welcome on one of his progeny. It is Sam's son, Aslan. Welcome and congratulations, buddy.
Hey, Coach. Nice to be on here. Nice to see everybody here, hear your voices. Very happy to be on today and to talk about some of the things that Callie and I have been going through as, you know, a relationship process, that sort of a thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for doing it. I hope your old man didn't have to twist your arm too hard to get you to come on. Or were you happy to do it?
No, it's voluntary.
good stuff. Well, Aslan, it's your first time on. You're not getting any special treatment there just because you're blood. Ethnicity, religion, and I think we know you're not a father yet, but who knows? please let us have it.
Yeah, so I'm primarily English and Polish. And I think I have a bit of German somewhere in there. And my religion is, of course, traditional Catholicism.
I assume so, but I didn't want to presume. And perhaps we'll talk about the prospect of new white life out of you two lovebirds pretty soon. Welcome on, and let's move on to the true guest of honor, the lucky lady, the new bride, and the latest apple of Sam's eye. He's been nothing but complimentary about her. And God knows, being in the house of your in-laws is not always the easiest thing. Callie, welcome to Full House, my dear.
Hello, and thank you very much for welcoming me.
It's our pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on. Congratulations again. And if you wouldn't mind sharing with us, Callie, what is your ethnicity and religion, please?
Right. Okay. So I'm a Roman Catholic. And according to a recent heritage test that I just recently did, I'm something like 14% Northwest European, including France and Germany and places like that. About 19.9% Central Italian Roman, about 6% Spanish, and about 19% Eastern Mediterranean.
Lovely. And I have to say,
that's very specific. That's very specific, but yeah.
Basically. Well, it's consistent with that beautiful Portuguese accent that you have there. Spectacular. I love it.
Thank you. Thank you. let's
start at the top. Of course, you know, Sam's got a dog in this fight, as it were, but I'll do my usual, I guess, hosting or managing. And Sam, please hop in as you like. But let's start off at the top with these two lovebirds. How did you guys meet? And feel free to swap back and forth, talk over each other, get used to it. You got a whole life out of it.
Can you hear us okay?
Yeah, now we can. Yep.
Right, good. So we were speaking on Facebook for probably close to about 3, almost 4 years. Wow. And I guess we had a lot of mutuals on Facebook. On Facebook, it's always very difficult to post anyway, because a lot of the time people get doxxed within our community for obvious reasons. We all know who kind of manages Facebook and social media as a whole.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just noticed each other's pictures and each other's memes. And a lot of the time he'd comment and say certain things and then I'd respond. And then that kind of progressed to private messaging. And then that progressed to further things. And then he kind of visited me back in October kind of time. And then we just kind of got along from there, really. It's, you know, people within our community, it's so easy for us to get along with one another, because the more things in common you have with one another, the more likely you are to get along. You know, it's just like common sense. Like, if you have certain ideologies, but you want to speak to someone completely different, like if I were to speak to a communist, even if he were British, I know I'd have nothing in common with him whatsoever. So it just kind of makes common sense, and we clicked. And it's probably a combination of our personalities. We have very similar personalities. We're both really friendly and welcoming and outgoing and everything. And it just kind of like, it just makes sense. Like, I can't put my finger on it, but I felt like I knew him for years. You know, when you have that feeling when you speak to someone and you just can't put your finger on it, but you feel so comfortable for it. It was almost like I spoke to him like I knew him, if that makes sense. You know, like, it wasn't just someone, I've just met on social media. It felt very natural speaking to him. And we spent a lot of the time on the phone, Skype, and things like that as well before we met. So, yeah.
Beautiful. A Facebook love connection. Yeah, we are totally supportive of the you know, e-dating or whatever. I'm glad that it worked out for you. Now, Aslan, tell us the true story. How did you really meet? Go ahead.
It's basically what she said. It's a combination of Facebook and Telegram. You know, Facebook, you can only communicate so much about certain topics before Zucker throws a hammer at you. So, you know, for the more spicy conversations, that was more of like a Telegram kind of a thing. But yeah, though, for general relationship, though, it's like communicating at first, it was through Facebook, and we had a lot of shared interests, and we were in a lot of the same, you know, these meme groups on Facebook and different things like that, where, you know, we would see each other posting in groups, and then we would speak to each other a bit. And that was probably one of the things that sort of triggered my interest, or triggered her interest, was we like the same memes. We like the same groups. We would talk to each other, and you know, I progressed into a certain point in my life where I could basically afford to travel and to, you know, meet somebody. And, you know, I had never flown before, right? And I'd never traveled internationally. Wow. So this was all, you know, special, and it was all, you know, first time. You know, it was my first time on a plane, first time driving on the wrong side of the street.
Good for you for going for it, big guy. What was the point where it progressed from, okay, I'm really into this chick, I love talking to her, excuse me for saying chick, but you know what I mean. And what was the point where you said, hot damn, I'm hopping on a plane, I gotta do this? What was your decision making like there?
So the important part of that process in the relationship was sort of like, you talk to somebody, and then let's say you talk to them every day, right? At some point, you get to a comfort level, and if you're both comfortable and you're both available, right, then you can sort of pose the question and sort of play your hand, right? Because a lot of times you want to save your cards for the good play, and if you time it right, then you know, you just say, hey, are you available sometime at the end of the year? Could I come visit you? I'm interested in you, you know. And if she says yes, then you plan the trip, and then you talk about it, and you do everything that you need to do before going over there.
Sure.
But yeah, it's just about being comfortable with each other and playing your cards right, and not being too aggressive as a man, but being aggressive enough to show that you're interested, right?
Yeah, not a crazed one. Go ahead, Sam. Yep.
How about say something about the good or ill of online relationships or meeting people online? Have either of you had success or failure rate in that, or you found it to be awful and this worked out anyways, or it worked out great? Do you recommend it?
Okay. So maybe he's welcome to respond, but maybe I should say from a female point of view, it's especially difficult in using dating apps. I would kind of recommend that you don't perhaps do that. They're like the last resort. I would recommend that you perhaps try like a Christian dating website or something. I wouldn't recommend the Tinders, the OkCupid, because honestly, me myself, I've had so much trouble, you know, trying to get a guy that's, I guess, seriously wanting a relationship. I will spare you a lot of the experiences that I've had talking to guys online before in the past. I just don't think it's worth mentioning, but put it this way, they obviously don't compare to Aslan, which is probably why I'm with him now, you know. You hear a lot of horror stories, to be honest, but if I could recommend, say, online dating, I'd say either try a community where you know you're going to get along with one another. There's always websites called meetup.com. I don't know, that's like something that we have in the UK. I don't know if you have the US equivalent, but it's basically a website where you can type in what type of hobbies and interests that you have outside of the internet communities, say. And that's always a very good idea to kind of meet someone that may, you know, mutually perhaps share the same interests as you, but you always have to be careful about the politics of that. If you want something political, like I told Sam the other day, there is a website called VK. Probably some of you guys have already heard of it. It's Russian, therefore it's uncensored. So there's always, you know, communities on there all the time. But like I said before, the more in common you have with one another, the easier it is. I definitely wouldn't recommend dating websites or dating apps. So that you would be wasting your time, put it that way. Whether you're female or male, you'll be wasting your time with that. 99.9% of the time, they're a waste of time.
basically. Makes sense. How about, were you nervous about, you know, he wasn't a stranger, but he was an IRL stranger. You guys had never met in person before. Were you absolutely nervous about him? You know, if he comes over and it doesn't go well, you kind of got guilt or whatever, or were you near total confidence that you guys were going to get along well before he flew over to meet you for the first time?
So I could say that it was a combination of being very confident and nerves. He had told me that he was obviously attracted to me. So I wasn't that nervous about it. I wasn't just like, oh, yeah, you know, does he like me kind of thing. It was more kind of the general nervousness of just meeting someone for the first time. But I'd say it was probably half an hour to an hour of, you know, just feeling like the general jitters, as we call it in England, you know, just the general kind of initiation. Yeah, the initiation of you've just met somebody new and you have that first time nerves. But I wasn't nervous per se in the sense that, oh, you know, is this guy going to agree with me? Are we going to argue? Da, 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 because there was none of that. A lot of the time when we'd have our conversations, we'd talk about, you know, the obvious stuff. So I was never also nervous in the regard of, oh, are we going to have an argument about something? Is he going to say something and I'm going to disagree with it? There was, I just felt natural around him. And, you know, when it progressed to the hours long, actually, phone conversations that we used to have on a regular basis to actually meeting him, it didn't particularly feel that different, if that makes sense. It was just like a natural progression further. It didn't feel like, you know, something that was, I had to keep my guard up, if that makes sense, you know?
Absolutely. Beautiful. Aslan, anything else about making that jump? Were you curious about both of your mindsets? Were you guys both super eager to find someone, get married, and start a family? Or was this something you sort of just fell into because you both liked each other? You know, were you aggressively seeking a mate, or did you more fall into it together?
It was definitely, I would say, goal-oriented because...
Okay.
I mean, at one point, you know, you can't rush a good thing, and you have to. There is a little bit of falling into it, but also you have to kind of have some expectations and try to be goal-oriented as a man and pursue the various steps that need to follow. But you know. That, like I said, that has to be balanced against the comfort of the woman, right? You cannot rush a good woman to do something, yep. Right? If the thing is good and you both want it, then it will happen, right?
Sam, so, yep. Yeah. Sam, did you know about Junior's great adventure and his great gambit, and were you supportive, or did he spring this one on you?
Yeah. No, I knew that he was always on the phone having his online calls with her, and I had spoken to her once or twice briefly during that time, more or less to say hello. But I would see that he would be working on something. He was building some shelves and he had the phones sitting right out there, mm-hmm. and talking, and you know, with the image right there, so she could see what he was doing. He's working on these shelves, putting it together, and you know, cute. So stuff like that. It is I think a good feature in a way that we have this way to connect to each other. But at the same time, there's no substitute for in real life relating to one another. So and I've always been the type of person to say, go for it, you know, unless it's something ridiculously out of whack. But, you know, yeah. I always say, be open to things. Don't close your mind to things, and be realistic and things like that. So, and I knew when he was going and all that. So that was fine. I know it was a good adventure for him to do. He's been somebody who's just had his nose to the grindstone, so to speak, for many years, working and going to college and things like that for many years. He's perhaps developed a habit of kind of laying low and not being adventurous. So I think it was a high time in a sense to get out there and do something. And in fact, through the years, I think all of us in the family have said, why don't you go on a vacation? Why don't you go, you know, do this or do that? And he's, like I said, I think maybe just because of years of working a lot and saving money and going to school and trying to get all that done and stuff. So it was the right time.
He was embarrassed by his old man. That's why he was staying home. Perhaps. And Callie, I'm sorry, I skipped right over you, but were you pretty super eager to find the guy and get going too? Or was this like, whatever, take a gamble on this lad coming over to visit?
Yeah, sure. So basically, to elaborate a little bit more on what he said, to be honest, like I said, I had tried online dating in the past because, you know, where I live, it's kind of a small village. It's socially isolated a little bit. But I was definitely keen to find someone. I was married before in the past, unfortunately, that obviously didn't work out, and that was close to 7 years ago now. So you know, I don't know anyone that would actually say, gee, you know, I'd love to be single for the rest of my life. Most people actually don't want to be single. Most people, if you look at the statistics, are actually mentally happier when they're in a good, loving and a stable relationship.
For sure. I think that's what they say. I was just, not to gainsay what you're saying, but we were all over at my mother's house, and there was the Chicago Tribune, which I don't even like to touch, let alone read, but there it was. I was looking at it, and they had the article that single older women are happier to remain alone, and I couldn't help but think, like, that article is a cope to justify some inevitable thing, but I agree. You know, people, they live longer if they are married. They I think that they report themselves to be happier.
For sure. Yeah. And I was surprised today, Sam. I was just opening up the Wall Street Journal on my phone, and there was an article about the surprising health and mental health benefits of going to church.
Wall
Street Journal of all things. Yeah. It was just interesting. You know, mm-hmm. all the social interaction, the sense of, you know, the sort of peace that I guess you get from going to church.
Yeah. Well, there was that recently published data, you know, graph, Twitter thing, whatever, about they had categories, very religious, somewhat religious, not very religious, and no religion at all. And the intelligence and fertility were positively correlated for the very religious, and the somewhat religious was no correlation. In other words, a straight line. And then all the other ones were negatively correlated. So make of that what you will.
That's why I'm so unhappy all the time. Because I don't have the church of God in my life. Maybe, perhaps, some aspect of it. Serious, arguably the most important question for Aslan right here is, you know, you made your gambit and you guys had a good time and there weren't any surprises, but we've said often on the show that the most important decision of your life, of a man or a woman's life, obviously it can be corrected after the fact, but is the choice of mate and who you decide to marry. So what got you from, all right, you got to know her online and through lots of calls, you made the gamble to fly over there. And I'm going to guess that you went over there and then you popped the question there and maybe even got married on the same trip. I'm not sure. But more importantly, when or how did you know that you wanted to marry this lovely lady?
Well, I would say actually before I went over there, I knew that she was quality. She was a quality woman. And I went over there because I wanted to try something new and, you know, fly on a plane, visit a different country, go see her, you know, and just verify that, you know, that she was who she said she was, that England was, you know, everything that we had talked about it being. And basically, like, the first week I was there, honestly, I was like, well, she's exactly what I expected, and I'm very happy with her, and I would like to marry her, basically. So I didn't do that on the first trip. I just sort of okay. visited, and you know, we talked a lot. We went to a lot, on a lot of walks. We went to a lot of parks. Went to a lot of cafes. We had sushi. You know, we just spent a lot of time together.
Did you see any interesting landmarks?
Yes, we did. We went to Canterbury Cathedral, actually, because it was one of my university projects. I'm also a full-time university student. And the first time that Aslam visited, we went to Canterbury Cathedral, because one of the questions for my essay was actually, remember when we did that? It was taking a photograph of your local religious, like a landmark or something significant. And I chose Canterbury Cathedral, which is relatively close to where I live. And it's so interesting. I mean, the history, if you ever go to England, if anybody ever wants to visit England, I do recommend that they visit Canterbury, because that is just very, you know, the cathedral and inside of it is very beautiful.
The architecture is beautiful.
The architecture, and it has a lot of martyrs, you know, Thomas Becket and a lot of people who were actually martyred there. And they go to visit, they have been to their shrines throughout history. And it's just an interesting place to visit, you know, even if you're Catholic or not Catholic, I'm sure you will be able to appreciate the history that exists there for hundreds of years. So,
You said you were a four-time university student. I'm assuming that you got kicked out of the first three universities for thought crime.
I think she said full-time.
You said four-time university student.
If I'm not correct. Yeah.
We knew the thought police were bad over there. But we'll talk. We definitely want to talk a little bit about England later on. I'm kidding. Of course, it's beautiful. All right. So I assume that he popped whatever you want to talk about, the engagement, the proposal, and then talk about long distance. That's a tricky one. Craig, an ocean apart, families completely apart, little bit of culture shock, perhaps, but not massive. Either one of you, the proposal and the wedding and overcoming some significant logistical issues there. Yeah.
So the general process was it took about three trips until we got married. The first trip was just spending time together, firming up some details. The second trip was, okay, we're actually going to try to get married. And what do we have to do that, right? And then, you know, I have to go get a marriage visitor visa, and then we have to do all the steps for that, and then that's a process in its own. And then the third trip was like, all right, let's tie the knot, let's exchange some rings and go somewhere nice with a, you know, most trusted family members, and have a good time, have a good day. Go visit some castles and spend some sweet time together. And that was the general process. You know, it's just, you have to start out exploratory, and then you sort of develop that into being more directional. Right.
Sure. Callie, how do you want to add on to that? Yep.
So I wouldn't say there's any significant culture differences. It's very much the same. I mean, when I was young, a lot of the films or TV programs that I would watch would be American. And, you know, I'd get, you know, comments like, oh, wow, are you British? And things like that, you know. So it's Americans are very impressed with the British and vice versa. Whenever Aslan goes into a corner shop or whatever, you get some guy or woman, you know, saying, oh, you're American, how is your time here and this and that. But I actually enjoy America a lot, and it was some place that I always wanted to visit. So it's just interesting how I actually managed to visit my husband's family while vacating here. I always wanted to visit New York and California as well, and Miami, because of the wonderful beaches. We obviously do have beaches in England, but they aren't as vast as America. And there's plenty of things to see and do here. So I'm definitely enjoying myself and enjoying the company. And to be honest, I couldn't be more welcome here. And that's how I felt by a lot of local people and also you know, his family. So I'm absolutely enjoying my time here, and I'd be sad to leave, to be honest. So,
Coach, I made sure that I drove home the most important dictum that you could learn, which is around blacks, never relax.
Yes.
Yeah. Sure, there are certain places that, you know, Sam has warned us to kind of be wary of. But, you know, I trust Aslan. I'm in the best company that I could possibly be in. So I just kind of like, you know, we go out together. I mean, I'm not out by myself. I'd obviously wait until we come home from work, but we've been, you know, we've been to some nice places. We've been to some nice parks and visited family and things. And we've been to cafes, and the food here is very nice as well, by the way. I do like American food and the cafes especially. So yeah, I'm definitely enjoying myself so far.
Good stuff. Yeah, we Americans tend to think of, you know, it's either England or France or Germany that are worst off in terms of the invasion and the thought police. And then, frankly, there's plenty of places in the United States that are absolute hellholes. But it's beautiful that, you know, you guys both were still able to enjoy England and Sam's and Aslan's corner of the world. Sam, were you not invited to the wedding? That they just excluded you, or were you heartbroken that they got married over there and you couldn't be there? How did that go?
The date and the timing came kind of quick, and my work is somewhat flexible, but it was just not logistically possible to make it happen like that. So that's just how it was.
He is always welcome. He's always, sorry to cut you off, but he's always welcome. He's always welcome to England. He knows that.
Yes.
So we are actually aiming to be dual citizens of both countries. We'll see how it works out, but we will probably inevitably actually get a house in the US and the UK at some point in time. That's what I'd hope. That's the goal. So, you know, I'd definitely visit the US again, for example, and he knows that. He's always welcome to England and to visit my family and everything. We're very welcoming family in general, you know, so he would be always welcome there.
Well, for the listeners, one thing that I would say is, you know, the distances and things like that are more surmountable now than ever. My wife comes from the East Coast, and she's very close with her family, her mother and friends, and she has gone there frequently, and they, all of them, friends, her cousins, her mother, of course, my number one drinking buddy, her mother, comes here you know, like twice a year, and will stay for weeks at a time. So you know, it's even if people move across the country or across the ocean or something like that, it's always possible to keep in touch, you know, and visit
Sam,
each other.
Is this your first kid to get married? Shame on me for not knowing. Okay, first one. Yes. Very good. All right. Now, moving on to forget the decision to pop the question. Now that that's all behind us in the rearview mirror, the most important question is, when are you two lovebirds going to add to the brood and give Sam a grandchild? Just what's your thinking on going for kids, timing, et cetera?
Oh, we definitely want them. And I have expressed this to her before. I'll take as many as she'll give me. So we're both very open to that. We both want kids. You know, like everything else, it's a process, and you have to time it right and shoot your shot and try to get lucky and have a good time while you're doing it, of course.
Practice early and often. I mean, are you actively trying right now? Not to probe too much, but like if you got a positive pregnancy result tomorrow, would you be overjoyed, or are you trying to understandably enjoy a little bit of time?
Yes,
not necessarily pregnant.
Believe me, there's no problem in that regard, and yes, we have on a regular basis. So,
right.
Yes, the answer is yes.
But yeah. Pardon me, I wasn't probing for bedroom details. But you know, sometimes, yeah.
It's fine, and it's an important thing to ask. And absolutely, I would love children. I have had a daughter, but unfortunately, she passed away. So you know, I've somewhat battled and tried to reconcile myself and my feelings. I'm obviously not with my partner, my daughter's father anymore. Anyway, so I'm definitely, you know, happy with Aslan, and he is a better partner anyway. And I would absolutely love children with him. I would say definitely out of anybody I've met, he is the best person I've spoken to. And, you know, I get along with him, and I feel like for us to have children, it would be an extension of the love and the bond and the connection that we have. It wouldn't just be, oh, this is our kids, this is the next line in our genetics. Of course, that's very important. But also, I would feel like it's an extension of how we feel towards one another. That's how I would view our child.
Beautifully said. Did you guys have any, were there any, have you gotten in any bad fights yet? Have you gotten in any bad arguments, or has this just been, it sounds like it's totally, you know, easy street, smooth sailing from start to finish so far.
No, we haven't ran into any trouble. We've been damn close on a plane coming over here, but not anything in America. You know, everybody has actually been friendly, if anything. You know, so we haven't ran into any problems, fingers crossed, but yeah, everything has been smooth sailing. As I say, we somewhat watch where we go to, and we only go to certain areas. But one thing I want to elaborate on, in the case of England, because you know, when I talk about British culture, whatever. There are certain places in England that, unfortunately, a lot of the time, especially if you're white, and even further if you're fair-skinned and white, there are certain places that you cannot go, basically, anymore, you know.
Right.
Which is unfortunate, but again, you kind of do the research. And I just want to reiterate that, you know, a lot of Americans, when they think British, they think of London. I don't actually live in London. I live in a quite village short of an hour of London, so I'm not exposed to the inner city or the fantastic multiculturalism. I grew up in London. I was born in London. I grew up in London, but I haven't lived there in close to about maybe about 32 years now, actually. So it's been a heck of a long time, you know. So right. Yeah. I think, yeah.
I should have asked this at the top, but roughly, if you don't mind me asking, how old are you guys? You know, an age range, late 20s, early 30s, whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm in my early 30s and she's in her late 30s.
Fair enough. I have to ask Aslan, because this is the first time we've had this opportunity on the show. Tell us the truth. Was Sam a cruel, horrible, absentee father growing up and he's just doing an act on Full House every week?
No, he's always been very loving and caring, and he looks out for his children. You know, he's not, so a lot of fathers these days, and even the mothers, I think, are sort of neglectful, and they, you know, send their kids out to be babysat by strangers, or they send them off to school to, you know, be brainwashed by, for 8 hours a day, you know, your enemies. He, of course, is homeschooled all the kids. And
right.
That just speaks volumes about him. You know, he's not going to leave us to the wastelands or the wilderness or whatever you want to call it.
He's of course, very, I believe very that.
Yeah, I think it's important nowadays, sorry to interrupt you, but I think it's important nowadays to pay attention to the curriculum that they have in terms of children and indoctrination. You know, it's actually very scary what they are trying to push on kids nowadays. The very fact that they have men in dresses, you know, teaching adolescents about God knows what, you know, people say that this is a part of the new generation and this is so-called progression, but that's not obviously the type of progression that you want or need for your child. Ideally, you'd probably want a before 1960s scenario where everything was very clean cut, but obviously now things have changed and the powers that be obviously are in full charge right now. I don't think there's ever going to be a position where they could honestly take over as much as what they could. I think they have pretty much full control at this point. And like I said, it is probably concerning for a lot of the adult listeners here that probably do have children that are under the age of, you know, teenage age or whatever. But yeah, it's something that definitely you need to pay attention to.
Are you leaning? I'm sorry for stepping on you there. Are you leaning one way or the other in terms of, you know, you could have homes in both countries, but where do you guys think you would more likely set up shop for, you know, the majority of the year or full-time settlement?
It depends.
Jobs and the rest.
Without revealing too much, because I'm trying to be very careful as to what I say here, but there is a certain time period for the visas to come through. And let me tell you that the US is far, far more difficult to get into than Europe, just in general. Uh-huh. And it just seems surprising that the type of surnames that we have, that we would actually have any type of difficulty getting into each other's countries. But again, you know, the powers that be, it's actually, my mum says that this is love tax, you know, that they are basically taxing people for falling in love with one another. And, you know, you can't basically help who you fall in love with. You know, you can't.
Yeah. Whatever happened to love, love is love, right? Doesn't love win or whatever?
Only if things go in. Only if things go in your butt.
In the wrong place. Yeah. See, I was thinking that these two newlyweds should just have a wild weekend down in Tijuana and then just sneak Callie across the border, and she'd be right as rain. Yeah. Forget the formalities. Yeah,
you would hope that was that easy. But America, I must say, is particularly difficult. And there's also something else that I want to add. Not that I particularly care, because there's actual loopholes around this, but things are very extortionate. I'm sorry to say, and I don't mean to offend any type of Americans while I say this, but things are very extortionately expensive compared to, you know, where the biggest, you have the one of the biggest inflation rates in Europe, actually, compared to the States. It's, I must say that things are very incredibly expensive here compared to Europe in general. That's also something that I've noticed.
Well, not a gallon of gas, that's for sure.
There are certain things that are cheaper, like gas is cheaper, and also the gas in your bills.
Yeah, in general,
and electric in your bills and things.
Energy is cheaper in the United States, but then you trade that away for everything else.
Yeah. I mean, the price of food, it's incredible. I don't understand how you guys live, honestly. It's unfortunate, but yeah, that's something else I guess I've noticed.
Aslan, I'm putting you on the spot. What's your favorite childhood memory of your old man? What's the first thing that comes to mind that puts a smile on your face with old Sammy, baby?
Ooh. I remember he had a take your child to work day, and he was working some kind of an engineering job, and I was able to visit the plant that he worked at. And I got to see all the machinery and, you know, all of the different processes and all the different people.
They make heavy agricultural equipment. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very interesting to see all of that. So to me, that, like, when I think of a significant memory like that, there's a few memories like that where
sure.
he took me to work and I was able to see what he did.
incredible.
Very interesting.
When my dad took me to work one day, he worked in an office, of course, in Philadelphia, engineer, and they had F-117 Stealth Fighter as a video game downloaded on one of the computers, and they set me up, and I said, oh, man, this is the layer, you know, forget it. Right. My old man didn't take me to a factory. He took me to an office, and I played a video game on the computer. I said, this is federal employment. This is the tits, yeah. play video games and get good money and be home on time every day. My dad, yeah. Oh, yeah, and the vending machines. Oh, yeah, that one of my favorite memories with my old man. And then over to Callie, what is your favorite childhood memory from old England? The tea party out in the countryside? I'm mostly kidding. But what's the first thing that comes to mind, my dear?
No, but there was a project that's actually quite famous in England, and people, I won't mention it, but there is a project that was done in the 90s that my dad actually worked on. And, you know, whenever we're in the area of that project, he'd point that out and then he'd tell me what he worked on to do with that and stuff. So that was interesting. I'm familiar with the work that he does, which, of course, is kind of, you know, it's interesting that he gets me involved because I obviously like the subjects that I like. But he's into his own stuff. But of course, you engage as a family, don't you? You know, like Sam has obviously taken his son to where he works or introduced him to it. And it was very much the same as me. I kind of like have to get in daughter mode and, you know, make me focus on whatever he's talking about, you know. Right. So, yeah, it's interesting.
He was an engineer, right?
Yeah, he's an engineer. Yeah, he just kind of briefed me on what he worked on, like I said, and that was the reason why we moved out of the area where we went and moved to that particular location. So yeah,
fair enough. And Callie, how about in terms of, we'll tread carefully here, but obviously you and Aslan are quote unquote dissidents of a certain stripe. You know that things are screwed up and need to be corrected. What were you a normie? Were you a lefty? Were you a conservative? And how did you sort of ideologically develop? Did you notice something? Did you read a book? Just noticed England starting to turn south. What was it that sort of changed your thinking? Yeah.
Definitely, I'd say a turning point was in the secondary school. Sorry, I should say high school, as Americans say it.
Thank you.
I was introduced to a lot of actually anti-German propaganda, and I suppose as you get older, your mind kind of drifts off the basic age of whatever you've been taught, and you like to do your own research on things. And I suppose. Sure. That was, I guess, the turning point in inverted commas, where I kind of realized that we have been systematically lied to about many things, obviously including that, and also many things. And obviously, you know, I'm aware of the Jews, and that it's the same problem that you have in America in the same way that we have in Europe. But I also want to say that there's probably a general misconception that, you know, in Europe that they're not entitled to a voice. I would say that we are entitled to a voice, but we have to be quiet about it. It's like backroom kind of things and in your mum's basement talking about it rather than protesting out on the streets and stuff. So, you know, there is certainly a scene, as it were. I would definitely say early teenage years onwards, I kind of, I only associate with people that kind of share my point of view. I think at least for the past 10 to 15 years, that have been the case.
Good for you.
It's kind of like, I'd say less of a headache. If you only associate with people that you know, share your ideals, as it were, then you're bound to get along with them. Basically, you're not going to think any different. So I could talk to you actually about many things, but I'm not sure how much time you have, basically.
Yeah, Rollo fell asleep on the time stamping, but we're coming up on the break for sure. Aslan, I got to ask you, you know, your father, of course, is unabashed, unashamed, quite vocal about his worldview and his politics. What did you basically take everything that Dad said at face value? Did you ever rebel against his worldview? How did it work out for you growing up, buddy?
I would say in general, I was receptive to him and receptive to the skinheads that he associated with. And I've kind of identified with a lot of those beliefs. To a degree, the straight edge stuff minus the, you know, anti-racism, I don't think that's the right position to take. I think you have to be racially conscious and you have to sort of seek racial unity as a concept and as something that you should try to implement in your life. It can't just be an idea. You know, right. That's where people get lost, I think, when they hear all these ideas and then they have them all trapped in their head, but then they never do anything with the truth. Right. Yeah. So,
it's wonderful to hear. Cause you know, I worry about the whole rebellion thing and going too hard versus, you know, pretending to be a normie when the kids are young, you know, what's the magic balance between giving them the truth and not risking them rebelling. But yeah, gratifying to hear that. It sounds like that.
I would do it, but I would do it slowly. Try not to do it, obviously all in, you know, their faces at once, because that's never going to work. But if you introduce them to them slowly, there's always a certain pace where you can introduce anything, basically any type of ideology or ideals in our case, to children, that it has to be something that needs to progress over the years. You can never go in full guns blazing, basically, with anything, I think.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Sam, anything that you think we should add or question or supplement here with the two lovely newlyweds?
Well, no, you know, the one thing I was going to bring out a little more was impressions of America. You know, we live here.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe where we have blind spots or things like that. So, you know, they always say fresh eyes are the best eyes. And though Callie has provided a few insights and observations on America, but maybe any other things. I joked about the cornhole game, which was funny. But, you know, any other things, any other, you know, contrasts or similarities or any other striking things that come to mind before we end the hour?
Right. So I noticed that on the motorway,
on the highway,
yeah, I need to get my mind in American right now, that you have the little advertisements on the side of the road. I've noticed that. We don't actually have that. And that's interesting as to why that would be, because often you'd have it, you know, like 70, 80, 90 miles per hour, but you'd still have like adverts on the side of the road, you know. I'd wonder why that is. I must say that the parks and the land is also very vast. And I also noticed that this is something that we don't have in the UK, albeit not very often, that the houses have quite a lot of space between them. The houses are quite a bit bigger in America than what we have in England in general. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed also that there's a lot of space between the homes, which I find interesting, but also I think it's better, because imagine if you have neighbors that are a-holes, you know, you don't exactly want to be stuck to them, you know, on one side or even both sides, as the case may be. So, so yeah, there's definitely some similarities, as I say, and differences. Definitely the similarities would be obviously the common speaking of English, and people recognize British TV shows, and we recognize American TV shows and films and stuff. So yeah, as I say, so far I'm enjoying my time, and I'd definitely like to at least visit at some point in the near future.
Heck yeah. Aslan, how about you and impressions of England? And then I got one more for the both of you, and then we'll let you go.
Yeah. So my impressions of England are that the houses are all conjoined, which is a bit shocking to me, because it's Like, everybody has a neighbor on the left and a neighbor on the right, and the, you know, it's like, it's kind of like being in an apartment. You know, you can hear when your neighbors drop things, or when they have fights, or when they watch TV. You know, it's kind of, it's interesting because the houses are all conjoined in a line, but then you still get some of that atmosphere as if you were, you know, in an apartment building. So that was very interesting to me to see that dynamic. And then another interesting thing I saw was a lot of people convert their garages or garages, as they say.
Right. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Garage.
Yeah. They convert their garages into like a spare bedroom. A lot of people do that.
Right.
Which I thought that was very strange because, you know, where are you going to park your car? And I guess people just park their car on like the side of the street or like in their garden, and then they like convert their gardens into like driveways. And it's very different than what I'm used to. I'm used to living in corner houses my whole life. So I'm used to having a big lawn on both sides. I'm not used to having neighbors nearby. So it was a little bit shocking to me to see how the houses are like that in England.
Sure.
But it wasn't anything that I couldn't handle. You know, it's just, it's remarkable.
It's notable that neither of you, you know, Aslan isn't like, oh my God, the dystopian Big Brother 1984, you know, Oceania. And similarly, Callie, you're not like, oh my God, you know, this really is a mulatto stud farm over here.
No, like I said, I won't name exactly where I live, but I live in a relatively small village that's kind of quiet. I would say the most diverse that we would get is probably like Poles, Italians, kind of Greeks and stuff, but that's it. That's, you know, we don't have the urbanness. It's not in a city. It's a nice, quiet, small suburban town. And, you know, so, yeah, I don't expect any trouble there. And that's also, what do you think about the food in England?
Well, the food was, I mean, it's interesting because people had warned me about the food, but I had no problem eating English food. And I actually, when I went over there, I cooked some steaks and with some red onions and red wine, and it tasted delicious. And I, you know, a different day I cooked sausages with curry, and that was amazing. And I had no trouble with any of the food there. Like I said, we had sushi a lot there. And of course, I think people are like sort of fearful of sushi in England, and they think it's weird, but it's like, is it that weird that the whole country is surrounded by oceans? It's not weird to eat sushi in England. Let's just put
it out there. Exactly. Yeah. And just quickly, sorry to interrupt, but just quickly, in England, we have actually a lot of taverns, and especially Canterbury is very famous for taverns. So we have like a converted barn that's actually quite near us. It used to be an above a stable, actually, for horses. But they've converted it to a restaurant, and the food there is quite nice. It's like a family place. And it's reasonably priced, and, you know, we'd visit there from time to time. We'd, you know, have a drink, or we'd have our lunch there or something.
Oh, yeah.
And you like the food there, right?
Yeah, that's so good. Good food, good drink, good company. Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, we're overjoyed for you guys. Congratulations again. We wish you many sons and a lot of guns, at least when you're on this side, lawfully owned, of course. I don't know about over there. Many daughters too, of course. We love our daughters just as much, if not more, than our sons. And last call for to Callie and Aslan, give the audience a little bit of inspiration or hope. I mean, you guys went for it, and it's smooth sailing so far, and I trust it'll stay that way. Little bit of advice or inspiration for our single guys and girls out there.
So I would say to men, never give up. Try to broaden your horizons a bit. I know it's a bit costly, and it's a bit like physically draining, and you may feel fed up after a while, because there's obviously, you know, people get physically tired, but if you're going to get a relationship or even a marriage out of it, I'd say it's worth it. There is no place too near or too far to find love. And that's exactly what we found. So as an inspiration for men, I'd say don't give up. And if you cannot find what you're looking for in the States, there are plenty of women who are more than willing to get married and want to get married to American men or Canadian men or whatever. You know, just like I say, broaden your horizons and certainly don't give up.
Amen.
And I would add to that and say, for the men and for the women is, you know, be receptive, be communicative, talk to each other, talk to each other often. And all that talking sort of builds up your expectation of the other person. Because if you know, like, how a person thinks, you can tweak, you know, you can tweak yourself a little bit to, you know, mesh better with them. The men or the women can do that. So that'd be the most important thing is keep your lines of communication open. Don't burn any bridges. Be consistent. That's probably, mm-hmm. you know, the second most important thing, right? Communicate, be consistent, be righteous, right? Be a truth sayer, always tell the truth. And if you do all those things and you communicate long enough, then you build a trust, right? And that's the fourth thing is trust. You have to have trust with the men and the women. If you trust each other and you've done all those other things, then you can conquer the world.
Amen, Aslan. Congratulations again, big guy. Good on you for going for it. And Sam, job well done. I'm jealous for many reasons, but mostly because, you know, I've thought many times how much fun it would be to have the kids for like a full house round table. They're too young. It's too risky.
Yeah. Right?
But right, it would be a lot of fun. And good on you for having your son on and his new bride.
Yeah. Great.
Hell yeah. All right. Well,
yes, thank you for having us, guys. We really enjoyed ourselves. Anytime.
It's our pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations again. And the DJ booth is over to Aslan. What's the audience going to hear, big guy?
Let's see. So I think I posted Benito Mussolini.
The perfect girl.
Oh, yeah. That's a good song.
Absolutely. Thank you for not going with the 10-minute opera that you were reading. I'm all for indulging our guests, but come on. I mean, 10-minute break music. No, I'm busting you, buddy. Thank you. Congratulations, guys. Good luck having
Thank
kids.
You so much.
And we'll be in touch. Enjoy your time in the Sam household. We'll be right back, guys.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Who was Benito Mussolini?
He was the father of fascism, the iron-fisted dictator who ruled Italy for more than two decades.
Io sarò alla vostra testa!
Thank you.
back to Full House episode 184, New White Love edition, and absolutely grateful to Sam's son and his new wife for coming on. Thank you, Sam, for proposing. That it was a no-brainer from my end, of course.
Yeah.
I had some, you know, it's like crossing the streams a little bit when you bring family into it. It's a little
sure.
bit, not nerve-wracking, but, you know, a certain element of risk. They handled it with aplomb, and they're just like normal people, right? I don't mean normies, but not, yeah, it's like, yeah, I'm going to come on a show and talk about my life and how we met, and now we're looking forward to having kids. Now the world is screwed up. It's all factual, obvious, right in front of you. But today was one of those days when I don't think I thought about the state of the world for a second. Knew we had mid-70s, clear skies, quite brisk out there. Got the lawn mowing done. My seeds are in the greenhouse finally. I went back. I was a month late this year. I got them in early March last year, early April this year. But a few of them are starting to pop. And then that means I got to do work on the rest of the garden to get it ready for the transplanting. But what melted my heart today more than anything else, but the kids were playing down in the valley. Sometimes I will rope them into my chores and yard work, etc. Other times, if they're having a blast, they were shooting water guns today. They were jumping on the trampoline. I said, let the kids be kids and have fun on this beautiful day. But I went up to the dirt road to fill in some potholes, which do appear with a certain regularity. And then I hear this sort of like cling clang from off in the distance. And who was it but my lovely daughter trudging up the path with the big, heavy, flathead shovel that she found. And she came along. I said, oh, my goodness, way to make my day, dear daughter. And she said, do you think I could earn some money for helping you on this road? I said, yeah, I think you can. So little did I know it was a money making ploy. But I said, yeah, but wow, you have to do good work. Yeah, you can't just like, you know, put a little dirt in this one hole and then put your hand out. So she worked with me the entire time, went back, and we made a long road. It was a good weekend with me and my daughter because the boys did not want to make our pilgrimage, our Hajj to Costco in Winchester this past weekend. So daughter came along with me. I let her play DJ off my phone. And when we got there, I said, hey, if you make the trip, you get a little extra allotment of snacks. So normally would not get a 30 pack of like Cheetos, Lay's, Fritos, but she is a snacker and a sweet tooth. So she got that too. So, you know, somebody said in the chat the other day, oh, my daughter was my best friend and everything was great up until age X or whatever. So I tried to keep that thought out of my mind and just focus on the ear. And now, and real quick, I wanted to promote trampolines. No, I do not hold any investments in trampoline companies. I am not a trampoline salesman, but that I have to say has been it's not the single best purchase we made since moving to the country, but right around COVID, wife said, we need to have a big old trampoline. I had one when I was a kid. Of course, it has the net around it. And 4 years later, they are still using that thing on a regular basis, giggling, they wrestle, they try to impress each other with flips, friends come over and it's a hit. It's holding up well, more or less. They hang on the net sometimes and I had to duct tape it up there. But if you know, I have some guilt because we never got a big, you know, play set here. I was thinking about getting swings, but Junior was already getting too old for it. They're pretty expensive. But the trampoline, absolutely. If it's crossing your mind whether the kids might like it, I say go for it, because you know how many times do you buy crap or borderline crap and the kids will play with it for a couple days and then it just sits forever. And I am so overjoyed, frankly, that the kids are still out there, all ages from junior down to potato, are still getting regular use out of it. Makes my heart sing.
I remember on the Man Show, they had a segment with trampolines. I don't know if you crawl that.
That was a mean backflip on the trampoline. Yeah.
That was the end of every single episode. Now girls on trampolines.
Yeah. Well, okay. Now I see you're giving away a lot of information here. Maybe people wouldn't, you know.
Show, don't tell, Rolo. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's what I had in mind. I didn't. Maybe I shouldn't have said so.
See, I'm keeping it wholesome. Sam's thinking about booze.
Well, I'm trying to not go too far with it, but yeah, you know. It's like I said,
it's not exactly like erotic, you know, the bouncing, but it can be, I guess. It depends. Depends on the woman, perhaps. Yeah.
Well, like we said a minute ago, you know, how long does the show go? And I'm extrapolating. I'm in my 80s and maybe you are in your 70s. And then we can talk about, at least we get to the point in life where you're not looking at the woman in that respect every single time, you know, like you could shake a woman's hand without getting excited.
Yeah, without the Terminator eyes. Yep.
Yeah.
See, right. I thought you were good. Yeah. Like I had Metamucil today, coach, and I had a good movement.
Or that too. Yeah. The topics will change when I'm in my 80s, you're in your 70s, the topics are going to change. That's all. Let's leave it at that. Topics will change.
And good segue too, Sam. Thank you for bringing it up because I was totally lucid and candid. And when I didn't mean to bellyache, it was not a cry for help or like approbation from the audience, but it was just, you know, serious. It was a combination of being a little bit bummed with the low numbers on the gardening show. And then also just, you know, the general sort of semi frustration that I think a lot of us feel. We're not canceling the show or anything like that. And a bunch of people chimed in. Jim Nation, okay, Emperor, Prussian Blue, a couple buddies of mine texted and said, you know, still love the show. It's still great. Don't you even dare think about
right.
canceling it. And he said,
how
yeah,
dare you.
You just need a little bit of, yeah, a little bit of fluffing, coach. You needed your ego stroke. Well, it worked. Yeah, we all have certain needs, I guess. But yeah, and by the way, the numbers went up big for Conte. Big thank you to the Western Chauvinist for boosting that. He's like the Ricky Vaughn of Telegram, sort of a hub for all of us. And Greg did a great job too, and people seem to appreciate it and excerpted it. Tough one to say. And all the rest. We're still going to stay in touch with Greg for sure.
Yeah, good guy.
Got to talk about the massive happening just on Saturday, just yesterday. It is now, it's not officially tax day yet, almost, fam. Got to file your taxes by April 15th. But Iran launching hundreds of missiles and drones at Israel as promised in retaliation. That counts. Gosh darn it. I mean, that is happening even if. Go ahead, Sam.
Well, you posted that poll, you know, with the snarky, you know, nothing ever happens option. And and I actually voted I think something is going to happen.
You and me.
And yeah. I only believe it because, see, that's the beauty of Telegram. You could get on some of these channels. It's not what CNN says or some other dumb news agency. You're getting reports from like foreign military or foreign news services or, you know, you're getting a well-rounded viewpoints and
Iranian
reports.
News?
Iranian. Yeah. And so when you start to see all those things popping up, no, something is going on. They're moving this equipment here and they're making these statements here and there. You got to know something is going to happen. And also from the other side, there is a genuine chill going through that Israeli society and their news and the attitudes of common people.
Absolutely. And let's be honest, that was a sincere poll. Of course, the answers were it's happening or nothing ever happens. But the question was, will Iran strike Israel this weekend? And they freaking did. They said they had to respond. Sure, there was a ton of propaganda. There was plenty of reasons to be skeptical. They always talk a big game, you know, those Persians and they're like long time preference, low time preference, high time preference, whatever it is. But all signs pointed to no, the president like went back to the White House from Delaware. This statement was issued. Planes are in the air. Like, no, that looked like it was happening. And credit to you and me, Sammy Baby, for calling. Now, granted, it was a 50-50 shot, you know. Overwhelmingly, our guys who are addicted to nothing ever happens were wrong. And it did happen. I don't care if, you know, Tel Aviv was not reduced to rubble. The Israelis didn't launch the Samson option like in immediate response, but this thing still has some baseball to play. And there's a couple of interesting details. Yes. I posted on the channel just before we went to tape, but check it out. Simplicius, or Simplicius, as I prefer to call him, our Afro-American friend somewhere in Russia. He said, no, this was bigger and more effective than you're led to believe. You look at like, oh, they made a little hole in a runway, big deal. But apparently they took out an Air Force Intel headquarters and more got through. They experimented with some hypersonics, apparently. And as our pal, I messaged our pal Patrick Martin, who came on, of course, for the War Drums Middle East. And I said, finally, big guy, it took him long enough. And he said, yeah, they were probably probing and testing. And that was also running through my mind big time, too, that this was an intelligence gathering operation, both for Iran to test out their air defenses and for Israel to see what works and where things came from. And we still, this thing is not over by a long shot. There's still maybe, now that would be another good poll, 50-50 chance, perhaps. Is Israel actually going to strike back at Iran? Because we've heard conflicting messages going out that there will be a response and we do not want to escalate from here. Not sure on that one. I am totally up in the air right now. I'd have to scan and do more research as to whether apparently Biden said, no, do not. We will not support it. Of course, Israelis are going to do whatever the hell they want to do and tell us to pound sand while begging for more money. And of course, Mike Johnson, right?
Well,
go ahead, Rollo.
That's where I think the discrepancy comes in. This whole like, well, base Biden. Well, now I'm riding with Biden. Well, we still have a limited, we still have a limited amount of resources. Like we did use up a lot with that pointless Ukraine thing. So it's very possible they said, like, we're not going to help you because we physically can't, because an escalation may actually lead to a third world war that the United States at this time is not capable of not only winning, but just fighting. Like, yeah, we may lose everything. And this has been my suspicion for a while. I think they are ready to just like the DNC is just ready to throw in the towel and just let Trump be the next president, because he will absolutely be the guy that says, yep, we're going to support our friends in Israel. And we're going to war.
Iran just killed an American. This will not stand. America supports Israel. Unlike Biden, I would defend Israel from day one of my presidency. Congress must pass unlimited aid to Israel to stop Iran.
That is my genuine prediction, is I think they'll, If they wanted to win, they would have started, you know, trotting out like a serious Democrat who has some kind of energy and some kind of charisma. But now they're already talking about, Joe Biden's, he's great. He's better than ever and all this stuff. So I think they're just ready to just trot him out, let him lose, and then let Trump be the guy that goes to war. Because worst case scenario, for them is that he's the embarrassing president that got us into another pointless war that we're going to be paying for generations. And this is why you got to vote Democrat.
Yeah.
Republicans go to war just like Bush.
Yeah. When I saw those Trump posts, my gag reflex was instantly triggered. And I thought, oh, screw even cynical support of Trump. And then I said, we know he is this way. I'm not coping. I'm not making any excuses for it. It's disgusting. And I actually,
but also any Democrat that's in power come that time, Joe Biden, right. if he does manage to get a second term, his administration will still send as much as they can in support for Israel. Like, you think Merrick Garland and Anthony Blinken are not going to use the United States like a credit card? And I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to people listening.
Sure. Yeah. You think Biden's going to veto an Israeli aid bill, which apparently.
Yeah. And there are people that do believe that. And like, if you honestly believe that, you are a stupid dum-dum. This is just like a good chance to get Trump back in, just to be the fall guy should anything go wrong for this war that is inevitably going to happen, regardless. Yeah. Even if RFK goes in there and decides he's going to run Bull Moose Party, he will still push for a war against Iran for Israel.
it's hard to say. I don't know when it would happen, but the ratcheting, this attack was happening, if for no other reason than it was a ratcheting. Now, I was technically incorrect. I thought it was the first sovereign mass attack overt against Israel. Obviously, the proxies and Hezbollah have attacked Israel before, but I did forget that Saddam launched a few Scuds at Tel Aviv during the Gulf War in 1991. Right. So that definitely qualifies, you know, not since 1973, it's since 1991.
That's when they talked about the Patriot.
Exactly. You remember that, Sam? CNN watching that footage and all those guys. But if the U.S. presidential race were simply like, if Israel was the only issue between left, right, Biden, Trump, Democrats, Republicans, you would have to concede that Democrats / Biden are better on that issue alone, if for no other reason than they are slightly more resistant to Israeli demands and less publicly slavishly committed to this garbage rhetoric about stand with Israel, greatest ally, all that stuff. But that is not the only issue in the world. Unfortunately, don't get me wrong, folks. It disgusts me more than almost anybody. And it made me think, you know what? F that guy and my cynical support. I'll just give zero support, not even cynical support. But you know, then Trump, you know, he made it like, I'm going to Allentown, Pennsylvania. We're going to hold this rally and we're going to defend Israel. And then what does he say there? He says good things about energy. He says great things about immigration. He says great things about the justice system and, you know, actual, inquisitions essentially. And then he throws in some Israel stuff there for his neocon funders and bundlers, et cetera. So it's not quite so simple as just voting on Israel. If we got mass deportations and cheaper gas prices and lower inflation and immigration sanity, I'm not saying we're going to, then I could almost stomach the Israel BS. But of course it's not just Israel BS. It's risking serious.
Would you seriously support him and vote for him if there was a guarantee of 50 million deportations, but you're going to get the war?
Oh, good one.
So
you're saying we would get 50 million deportations plus American fighting in a war in the Middle East? Yes. The answer is yes.
Okay. Because the reality is, no matter who gets elected, the war is happening.
Seems so.
Like, because
our involvement is not necessarily happening, but support versus defense versus offense.
Yeah, but the last five major wars, with the exception of the five major wars, were all. I mean, Democrats were the ones that pushed for it and like got us into it.
You're talking about
Korea was Eisenhower, a Republican.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? Oh, I thought it started with
With Truman.
Truman. No, yeah, I thought Truman started with
it was Truman. Yeah, late 40s. Right. And of course Gulf War was Bush. Everything else was Bush during the 2000s. And then Obama was just down with like,
and the two world wars in Vietnam were the ones that I was thinking of.
Those were all Democrat wars for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, so it doesn't matter. War is a bipartisan issue.
Yeah, and I think the people who say like, you're not getting 50 million deportations.
Of course you're not.
Yeah.
You probably will get is a reopening of the Dakota pipeline for cheaper gas. That's probably what you will get.
Fair enough. Yeah, but what's really fascinating to see is how. When, if Israel will respond, guys who I trust, no, they're going to respond. They will not simply take it and be like, "Whoo, that could have been worse. Let that one slide and recede." No, they're going to ratchet it up. And what Iran learned about Israeli vulnerabilities and what Israel learned about Iranian launch sites and missile capabilities. And I'm sure that we had AWACS and other jets up in the air observing all this stuff and satellites too. That is, it's a very cat and mouse game. It's hard to, you know, they said, Israel spent X billion dollars putting up their arrows and Patriots, et cetera, to shoot down some junk. But I'm sure like the Israelis aren't that stupid either. I'm sure they knew that some were decoys, some were garbage, and really fascinating, dangerous cat and mouse game. Dying to see what the markets are going to do with the open. Bitcoin, of course, puked at the moment. Zero Hedge was absolutely right. They're like, well, it's the only market in the world available, 24/7 Bitcoin market. You're going to see a blip there, and the other things won't show up until Monday morning. So that's an asset and a downside to Bitcoin and the 24/7 things. But to that real quick, Hong Kong is about to approve an ETF for Bitcoin on Monday, which is bullish going into the halving. Think of all those wealthy Asians looking to stash their yuan in something other than mainland China or Hong Kong as a hedge, should be bullish for it. But we, you know, we've talked about that and raised awareness with your audience for that for a while. One other thing I had here real quick, about once every 2 years, our septic acts up a little bit to the point where I don't hear, we got a two-stage system. So it comes out of the house, goes into the first tank. When it rises up to a certain level, then it flows over into the second tank. And then when that one rises to a certain level, it's got a float in there that activates. Oh, the water is high. And then it starts pumping our wastewater downhill. It's a more complicated or elaborate septic system than the usual ones where it's just draining without a pump and a motor. And today I realized, huh, that thing hasn't kicked on in a while. I just took a shower. I went out and I didn't hear any water trickling. So sure enough, I caught it. I opened up the second tank and it was near to the top and it hadn't kicked on, which in the, so what I had to do was I had to go get my rake. And I learned this the previous time, it was probably two Aprils ago. And I just jiggled the float. And then the motor came on and sunk down. All the kids came out and said, oh, what's that smell? I said, that's you. That's what you're smelling. That's your baths. That's your number ones and your number twos. And I was just having a grand old time. I had a cup of coffee. I brought out a lawn chair. And I was just, the sound of your septic system working after a little jiggle with a great, with the rake, let me tell you, that's living. The kids thought I was crazy. I was like, train spotting or just having a spot of tea out in the front yard with the, I was like Hephaestus out there, you know, I got to get in there. Stoking the septic embers. Anyway, just a little quirk of rural living. And one, you know, I called, there's like one old timer around here who like repairs septic pumps and, you know, the actual mechanics of it instead of just ripping it out and putting in a new one. And he's like, well, Sonny, I'll come out there and look at it for you. But if you're jiggling the float works for you, I just stick with that. You know, it's
talk about a business you should steer one of your sons into getting into.
Hey, if honestly, like if you don't mind it, you know, the guys who have come out here to pump it out, we usually go every 2 years. They say you can go as long as three. That, you know, it's not like they're gross hayseeds. You know, they got their overalls on and they're friendly and they're well-spoken, handshake, nothing gross about it. They just suck your crap out, drive it off, dump it off at the water treatment facility. Yeah. Money. they print money every day. Everybody needs
it. I bet.
Yeah. Let's go over to the great Rolito, and you said that you had a very interesting conversation with a Biden supporter recently. Do a little more politics in the second hour than the first. Tell us what it was all about, please.
Yeah, so it was a gentleman who is a client. I won't say much more. He was a bit on the older side, and he mentioned that. Like he wasn't just supporting Biden. Like he was like, no, this is good. So I have another group of friends and one guy in there was a Biden supporter, but then someone asked him like, what do you think about Biden's job now? And he said, oh, I don't know. And that was his way of saying like, it's bad. And that's what I assumed most people's stances would be like, it's gotta be better than Trump. And then, you know, four years into it, like, oh my, like, what have we done? I guess 3 years into it, but this guy, he was adamant. And so I want to play a game. you say something that you think that CNN or MSNBC would say about Biden. And I will honestly tell you if this guy said that or not.
Biden's leadership is key to American economic resilience.
He didn't say anything that specific.
Okay. Biden's age is not an issue in this election.
He didn't say exactly that, but he said something similar. But,
this game is going great. Go ahead.
You're saying stupid things. That's why.
the deficit of support that Trump is enjoying over Biden has disappeared, and the candidates are even now.
Wow, you guys are like, this is so much deeper. Okay. I thought you were going to say things like, okay, well, shit, since you both suck at this.
Biden will defend abortion rights. Go ahead.
No, okay, I'll skip it. He said, we have the best economy we've ever had. employment has never been higher. Wages have never been higher.
Yeah. Inflation?
The border is secure. Inflation is caused, well, it's caused by Reagan. There's nothing you can do about that. Not kidding.
35, 40 years ago. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. He's wiping out student loan debt.
Really? Where do I sign up for this?
Well, that's what I said. I said, I don't know a single person that has had any student loan debt wiped out. And he said, well, he's doing it for people that are like 70 something. And I literally said to him, oh, so people that are going to die in a few years. Yeah, no. And he also said, Biden is sharp as a tack. There is nothing to indicate any loss of cognitive abilities. But Trump, on the other hand,
okay.
Well, was this guy otherwise in, like, was he a moron or was he otherwise intelligent aside from
he seemed like a regular guy. He seemed to be kind of like a generic, like, more leftist type, like, you know right. Capitalism's bad and corporations are bad, and like, I'm pro unions and worker, like that type of thing. And this is why I've always been adamant, you're not going to meet a good leftist that you can bring over to our thing, because those leftists that are like anti-corporations, anti-capitalism, they're, mm-hmm. find one that's not like, I would let a transgender babysit my child. I'd even let him bring all his sex toys. Like, you're not going to find one that's like that. But that, he just seemed like a somewhat normal guy, but he was just like adamant, like, no, Biden, he is really sticking it to the corporations. It was like everything that he said, I was like, this is stuff that fat-faced black lesbian says like every day. Like, it's just like, it's like that joke from The Simpsons. Like, I want you to call me back and say the opposite things you just said about Homer. And the guy's like, Homer is a great worker. His hygiene is impeccable. Like that's what it was like. It was just like everything that is not true. And he believed, and he ended by saying, we need a blue wave. And this is where it got really crazy, because Trump is going to make himself a dictator. And I said, oh, why didn't he do that term one? He said, well, he wasn't surrounded by the right people. And I said, well, there's checks and balances. Well, those people he's going to surround himself with now, they're going to show him how to get around it. The point is that these people actually believe this. Like, you don't understand just how stupid regular people are. And they're not just stupid. They're crazy. And they believe wild things. Like, the media lies the way it does because people will believe them.
Yeah. I hate to mention it, but Michael Savage / Michael Wiener, you know, liberalism is a mental disorder. That was and remains true. it's really gotten a lot darker and a lot worse over the years, back when it was just like, we want to be able to kill babies and we should have more immigration. Now, there was an interesting question in the clubhouse late last night. By the way, I finally made it through Dune. It was a running joke. Rolo might
which
enjoy
one
this, that the remake first one, not Dune 2. You know, with the Sanjaya, whatever her name is.
Yeah,
Sandeep.
Because my son and I have fallen asleep watching it twice previously. I was like, let's watch Dune.
It's and a cure for insomnia.
Well, it was not a cure for. I see what you're saying. Yeah. But anyway, so I said, Junior, let's do it. Let's take the Dune challenge. Watch it and not fall asleep. He falls asleep again.
Take a bottle of caffeine pills. Yeah. And we're gonna watch
he's
Dune.
He's like, Dad, I read the book. Like, you know, I've already lived this one, but I finally made it through. I was captivated. I really enjoyed it. Why the hell did I bring up Dune? And the other thing was somebody said, well, Coach, what's your, you know, you talk about the regular person being more receptive to criticisms of Jewish power and racial issues. That sure. He's like, what's your interaction in West Virginia like with normal people? And I had to say, damn, you know, I have not in a long time. I've got one relationship here where we've talked about this stuff at length, in full detail, and we both get it, but we're usually in a situation where we can't both speak. We're kind of semi-public, so we can't speak totally freely, but I just don't have political conversations with people around here. It's just, you know, hey, how are you? Little like joke about the weather. Like, I guess you could do that in the shop or at work or stuff like that, but I'm just not having enough conversations with, you know, Joe West Virginia or Sally Mountaineer to say how receptive people are. Perhaps, you know, shame on, it's just like, what am I going to be like, hey, how about that? Like, I'm just not interested in talking about Biden or Trump or Israel necessarily with a
how about that border, eh?
Yeah, immigration's out of control. But, you know, that's also just a reflection of living rural and not having a lot of regular intense interaction with people like nearby neighbors and coworkers and stuff like that. For whatever it's worth, I just don't have enough data on that. Say, I mean, like, do you talk politics, Sam, with like people at work or like, you know, casually?
Sometimes.
Yeah, comes up in the break room. Or
I try to make it where there's a very sharp point to be made, you know, to really like shatter the false, you know, things like, you know, Israel is our greatest ally. Yeah. Those types of, you know, I'll bring up something where it's, but to have like a real open-ended discussion, I think is risky to do.
Yeah. Like, I don't have bars anymore. Maybe if I went to bars regularly and was just striking up conversations with strangers.
Well, the thing is, for like the uninformed person, you can really drive home a point, you know?
Sure.
So yeah, I would say you it's not something for the new person to do. I think you got to have a lot of experience and a certain amount of knowing what you can get away with saying and stuff like that. And it is important to try to reach people, I think. And especially if you could argue with people, I think is very healthy to do. But you do have to pick and choose your right moments. What's the risk involved and what's the gain and so forth. Yeah.
And then there's the Rolo strategy too. Rolo just shows up to random pickleball courts and says, I got next. And then he says, Jews did 9/11 with every serve. Jews did 9/11.
Well, that's what my team name is.
I raised pickleball because there is a beautiful, like, newish pickleball court not too far from us. And I was driving past it and it looked like, you know,
it's ping pong, dude. It's ping pong for old people. It's a slower ping pong for people that are 70. Around me that are like, pickleball is so great.
And it like, looks like a pong. Lot of fun. I don't know.
Get a ping pong table. Your kids will love it.
Dang it. I still, you know, I've torn my ACL playing tennis before. So maybe perhaps I need to tear it while playing pickleball.
I'll say this about pickleball. So pickleball injuries are through the roof it's because a lot of old people play it because it doesn't require a lot of physical exertion. So you can play it for really like 4 or 5 hours. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these older people that are just like, oh, well, it's a game that like we could play. It'll get us out of the house. And they're not used to that type of movement. So they're all getting wrecked because of it.
Sure. Well, we got a set and we haven't gone out to play yet. And the other night I was like, let's put on a pickleball instructional video. And everybody was like, you know, just
dude, I'm telling you, it's ping pong. If you know how to play ping pong, it's the same game.
Okay.
It's a super easy game. Anyone can go pick it up. I'm not dissuading people from
have you played, going have you played out it? Play.
Yeah.
Okay, I had a feeling. we didn't talk about this. I had a feeling you had played pickleball.
Yeah, but I'm just like, I'm playing it, and I'm just like, this is just ping pong. But like, you guys think you're doing something more than playing ping pong, but ping pong is a more intense game. It's just because the table is smaller, it tricks dummies into thinking that it must be a lower intensity game. But
reminds me of Seinfeld where he said, you know, tennis is just ping pong playing on the court or playing on the table. Yeah, pickleball.
No, but pickleball literally is. It literally is. Like the ball bounces the same way. It's because it's the same type of. It's a wiffle ball, so it's just hollow plastic. You know, it's not rubber like a tennis ball.
I looked at some pictures of pickleball, and it's always old people playing.
Yeah, for some reason. It's because old people. They can't go out and play like, you know, basketball or like high intensity games like that or soccer, but you can play pickleball like literally for hours. Like this guy that I know, he and his wife, they're both in their 70s, and then they'll go and play pickleball in the summertime, like Saturday mornings, and they'll play from 10 to 3.
Yeah.
And they're 70, and they do it like 5 hours straight. Because it is fun, but it's the fastest growing sport in America, but also most of the fan or the player base are old people. So I think it'll quickly be the fastest dying sport in America.
Well, there's no senior citizen nude pickleball leagues. That looks like something they would put it in.
Not yet.
And I would prefer a sweet pickleball to a dill pickleball.
You know, it's gherkins. I don't like gherkins.
I like gherkins.
Ah, gross. Yeah, I don't know. Give me my kosher. Oh, I've been exposed. Kosher dills.
Now it comes out.
More like kosher finstock.
180. Yeah, kosher. I don't know if I like kosher salt or not, but kosher pickles. They're the bomb. Rolo, when you were listening to that first half, were you, did you disagree? I mean, obviously they had Aslan and Callie had good luck. They had good fortune that they met online and they hit it off. Did anything rub you as misguided or was that a fluke?
No. I just think that's just another route to take. Like if you can take that route, try. And honestly, I have tried it and I tried it for a few years and it didn't work.
Yeah.
I came across a bunch of women that were like living in one bedroom apartments, like with their family, and they like did not want to move into my spacious home. They wanted me to move in with them. And I was like, all right, I found that to be the case more often than not. But I think you'll find less. You're more likely to find women that will be quote unquote trad in. Poorer European areas than America.
Yeah, and the whole Facebook thing was interesting too. I haven't been on there in over a decade, but that, you know, most people are operating under their real name. It's somewhat safer. We have this impression that, you know, you'd have to meet some Anon e-girl from Twitter, or even, you know, riskier, some Anon account on Telegram that might, you know, just be a total scammer, if not Antifa or something like that. But if you're on Facebook, those few precious few still on Facebook on their real names, that's a little bit of a safer playground than the Anon Twitter or Telegram space. I'm not sure if it's replicable enough to like advise it as a strategy to go wife hunting on Facebook, but worked in this.
Well, there are like sites where you can like just meet people in other countries, like not just like dating sites, but like there's because there are plenty of women that do want to live in America.
Europe. Just to be clear, he was not seeking somebody in another country. It just so happened among the friends groups that he was in of, I guess you would just say loosely kind of sort of right wing people, that he happened to strike up a conversation and relationship with her, and it just bloomed into something. And I suppose more than anything that my reason to have them on was just to, in the most general way, give a success story when so many people do complain of having a bad experience. In fact, they do have bad experiences or difficulties. And I wanted there to be a ray of light to say, yes, it is tough out there, but in fact, people are getting married. And so, you know, maybe Rollo or anybody might take some little part of that and be encouraged, I hope.
Help. Absolutely, Sam. And the thought occurred to me too, you know, what if my son came home and said, Dad, I met this wonderful girl and she's a German citizen or a Serbian citizen or whatever it might be from Europe. I would be my first reaction would be cool. Mm-hmm. That's exciting. That's
Are you sure she's not Muslim?
but I would also be like, okay, that's both an element of excitement and possible real advantage, the whole dual citizenship, you know, presence on both continents, options for the kids, options for to live in either country. But then I would also be a little bit more circumspect, or I might, you know, even grill her more than just some generic, and I don't mean that derogatorily, American white girl who he brought home. A little bit more. Just out of curiosity, Sam, did you, I could see a father of a daughter grilling his precious girl's prospective mate more thoroughly, but did you grill Callie at all when she first came over, or was it like the deed is done, you know, Junior's made his choice?
Yeah, it's already, it's all a done deal by this time. I did talk to her a couple of times through the time where they were talking. And I did get a sense that she did understand a lot of our points already. And, you know, that there was no problem with like, oh, we got to be careful what we say or do around this person and all that. And that, that would be, you know, we did talk about like, well, you would wish, or I would wish that somebody, yes, of course, of my exact religious persuasion and things like that, you'd like your child to marry somebody like that. But baseline is the person has got to be white. And because your religion is something, I don't mean to be flippant here, but you can literally change your religion at any moment. I mean, in the course of this conversation, if you declared yourself to be a Buddhist, I would have to accept you as that. You know, and then maybe on the next show, you'd back off of that and say, you know, remember that Buddhist thing? I quit. And I would have to accept you as that, too. So people can change their sentiments very quickly about things like that. But your race is something that's permanent. And so to me, that is the most important thing. Not that religion is unimportant. Religion is very important. But certainly race is at the bare minimum. And then I would say that at least that the prospective person appreciates your religion and at least is open to it on some level and stuff like that. That's how, for sure. That's what I would think.
Yep. Let's be honest. It struck me too. Her age, they got to get cracking. She has the same age as our lovely lady in the Cincinnati area that we connected with a few potential suitors. So that's certainly not too late, although it is, you know, a little sense of urgency.
Yeah, definitely.
Later in the 30s, to be certain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whenever my kids bring a prospective boyfriend, girlfriend home, they got the right uniform on.
Right.
Are they respectful?
You're talking about the SS uniform, right?
there's kids. Thank you, Rollo.
They make those uniforms in kid sizes.
I saw.
They probably do.
Can I not spurg, but rage out against septum piercings? Like when I see beautiful, attractive women with their noses studded with shit, it just repulses me on an instinctual, instinctive.
The septum pierce is the most unattractive piercing. It is.
Yeah, the only nose piercing I can get behind, I don't know if I endorse it, just the little, a little tiny diamond. Exactly. Yeah. That's a little flare that passes my,
nobody, you're not alone in that. There's not a single man. Like no one, I don't know, I'd like to say no one, but I've never met anybody that's like ears pierced. Oh, yucky.
Right.
But as far as like, you know, piercings go, like a lot of them, they're like, why'd you get that? And you know, like the eyebrow piercing or like the, you know, the chin or like the lip, but the septum piercing, it's really disgusting. It's like it's every charred. Time I see that, I want to say like, you know, that's what cows get, right?
Yeah. It just looks,
yeah, it seems like it would be like a cleanliness problem to it.
Right. Yeah.
So I had like my old barber, she had that piercing and she would say like, oh yeah, this thing always smells bad. But she looked as trashy as you can imagine. Just imagine a trashy woman with a septum piercing, and you're probably right to what she looks like.
Yeah, and it gives me the willies. It's just like, what if somebody went up there and like, what if you got it caught on a hook or something? driving on a stick jumps in through the car window and then you get yanked around by the.
Luckily the women that get those, they just spend all their time blackout drunk after all the boxes of wine they drink while nursing their house plants.
I don't want to be too cruel because I might know one or two lovely, intelligent ladies who have gotten it done. Not my wife, not my daughter, of course. But I, you know, whether they hear this or not, it's jarringly bad.
It just suggests that maybe that person is a weirdo in some way.
But they're like a fake weirdo though. That's the thing is a long time ago, people would get tattoos and piercings because they had trauma. And then at a certain point, those things became trendy. So they were just things you got. So now a lot of these people that I see with the stretched out earlobes and those terrible like facial piercings, it's like they're trying to be weird. Like that their identity is like, I'm quirky. Like I'm going to be quirky. They're not naturally like an antisocial, like dark, like scarred person. They just, they watched the New Girl and they read erotic fiction.
Well, and so frequently they're total conformists often.
Of course they are.
Yeah, and it's just this, they think this is some kind of statement, and I don't know, there's probably some girl who just thought it was something fun to do, and maybe she could let go of it just as easily as she got it. I think some people are like that, and in which case I would say, okay, I'm not going to make a big deal out of it, but if somebody's asking me and says, hey, I'm thinking of getting this, I'd say, no, don't.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's a fun little fact. So there's this a guy, a client of mine. He had like a flesh colored septum piercing and I was always like, that's so like, why, like, what are you doing? Like, I never said anything. And then, one day they mentioned like they'll be like out of commission cause they're getting surgery. I'm like, oh, what happened? And they were getting like a deviated septum repaired. I'm like, oh, what happened? They didn't know what happened. But it wasn't a septum piercing. It was like a medical aid that looked like a septum piercing. And it was to keep their nose open.
What?
And it was flesh colored to not like getting this like
not clear stand brain out on. As much. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like what they should have used on Arrakis, you know, one of the flesh colored nose breathing things. Yeah. Right. Instead of the black ones. Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. There's a Dune reference. That's what they call a callback. I thought it was a terrible septum piercing, but it was actually like some medical apparatus to like keep their airwaves open.
Yeah, and I don't want to, like, at the risk of sounding like an old geezer, like, I don't like that. I just don't like that, you know, because we've all had our parents
worth pointing out, I met a good-looking girl that had that, and it's distracting. Like, instead of looking at her face, I'm looking at this thing that cows have. Like, you're like a cow.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's like, all right, yeah, ears, a little tiny, even if it's a fake, you know, diamond in the corner of the nose, that's okay. I'm okay with a cup with a tattoo or two. That's not a deal breaker to me. Interestingly.
Oh, yuck. No one should have tattoos.
Yeah. Says you would say. Hey. Yeah. I'm ink free. I think my wife is still interested in getting a tattoo. She was like, hey, we could live a little. I was like, I may or may not have said, if you give me a third child, I'll get a tattoo with you a long time ago. But you should
each both get like half a swastika. And when you stand shoulder to shoulder, you finish it.
I know somebody, I'll be very careful here, who he got half and she got half. And when a certain non-sexual body part of theirs comes together, it's whole, which is pretty cool.
Wow.
I think it's cool.
Well, I don't know.
I threw that out as just a joke.
No,
it's an inside relationship joke. Okay. You know?
Yeah. I'm not anti-ink. See, I'm not totally uptight about everything. I'm just, yeah. No period.
I don't have a problem with tattoos. There's a girl that goes to the gym that I go to, and she has not only a lot of them, but they're really unflattering. And like, she has them like on her neck and her face.
Oh yeah. No
stuff like that. No, like you really do look like a prostitute when you do that, or like a stripper that dances only for clowns. Like it's not a good look. Like, I don't like there is a line to it, because no tattoos, no piercings, no debt, a virgin, like that. I know someone who unironically is trying to find that in a woman. Like, okay, well, good luck.
Seriously,
like, good luck. Like, if a woman has tattoos and you're just like, I'm out. Like, a long time ago, a woman would have tattoos and you're like, ooh, I don't want AIDS. But now, but now it's just like everyone has them. When I was first applying for jobs, banks would say you could not have any tattoos. And then now, like, they dropped all that. Like, I don't think there's a job in the world where or in America, at least, there's not a job in America where they say like you can't have tattoos. I dated a girl 9 years ago, and it was pretty funny because she had a degree in neuroscience, and she worked for Pizza Hut. And she wanted to work for Hooters. I don't know why. Something was wrong with her, as I came to learn shortly after. But I said, okay, what's stopping you? Like, if you want to work at Hooters, just go work at Hooters. But she said, I can't because I have tattoos. And that, so they like originally Hooters wouldn't hire girls with tattoos. Not anymore. They changed it. They dropped that.
Lowering standards.
Too many girls have tattoos. Like, what are they going to do? Hire 4 foot tall, 500 pound Guatemalan women?
when I was in college, they eat all the wings. there was this thing, if she has ink, she'll touch your dink. probably, a sign of being willing to be wild. Or if she smokes, she's down to poke. That was another one. And of course,
just don't kiss her.
And bother me at the time. And then when I was probably junior high, I wanted badly to get my left ear pierced, to get an earring on my left ear to be cool. There were a couple kids who had those.
Not the right ear, though.
No, very of course. Important. Right is gay. But remember back then? Yeah, right is gay. Left is straight. I wanted the left one to get pierced, and my mom shut that down quicker.
But you're like, but mom, how else will everyone know I'm straight?
No.
It's for the ladies.
Yeah. kids wanting to be cool and coming to their parents asking for certain things, and sometimes
mom, will you help me be cool?
Mom, can I have a starter jacket? Maybe Santa Claus will bring that one. Mom, can I get my ears? No,
can I have members only jacket?
No, that was Sam's Christmas list, 1979.
I remember those. I never had one, but
well, that's because you weren't a member.
No.
Anyway, Rollo is the official chairperson of the Limp Bizkit fan club. If you know Rollo.
It's a good band. No, they're great. Good. No, have you seen his movies? No, it's good. Like Fred, Fred Durst, like really versatile artist, like makes good movies, makes great music. He really like defined the late '90s. If you think about it.
One Halloween in college, I went with my girlfriend at the time as Fred Durst and Christina Aguilera. I found a, a red baseball cap. I couldn't grow enough facial hair at the time. So we actually put makeup for that little V chin facial hair. Yeah. And I remember I got really hammered and fell asleep at the house and she went home. It was not a good Halloween. Probably because I was dressed as Fred Durst. You know, I was channeling the id. Yeah. Anyway, I still haven't filed my taxes because I was waiting for that damn form. Not going to get it. It was like some small tax loss harvesting thing that might come down the pike. It never did. So I waited all this damn time to file. It's ready to go. But I could have filed 2 months ago.
Okay. One quick thing on that note. Yeah. A friend of mine, he mentioned to me today that his employer never sent him his W-2s.
Inexcusable. Mm. Yeah. No, that's like job one.
Yeah.
Even Mickey Mouse mom and pop send out W-2s as a matter of course.
Yeah. And he doesn't work for Mickey Mouse mom and pop. He works closer to Mickey Mouse. Yeah. And I remember at my first job, like I was told, oh yeah, they have to send you your W-2s by the third or fourth
week of January, even.
Yeah. Usually. Something like that. Yeah. I couldn't remember. And I said, but what if they don't? And this stupid person said, what do you mean they have to? Well, this is the first case that I've encountered. Yeah. A friend of mine just straight up like, yeah, at the time of recording April 14th, he did not receive his W-2s from his employer, Mickey Mouse.
Well, he's got to file for in that case.
He has to file an extension. And here's the crazy thing about that. So do you know how that works?
I've never done it, but I've read about it. And if you owe, you got to still.
Yeah, like, there's interest. There's up. Interest. Yeah. Yeah.
It's not just a simple extension. It comes with a cost.
Yeah. Yep. The extension, it goes to October, but it's only if you owe. So if you don't owe, then, you know, it's free. But if you owe, they tack interest on it, which is so ridiculous because it's not your responsibility to get your W-2s.
Mm. All right. Interesting factoid, mostly. Yeah. Let's get the hell out of here. Speaking of taxes and work tomorrow and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
I got to take daughter to her annual checkup, which is something that we have always been just a little teaser for the parents out there. Some would probably be like, screw that. They don't have to, if they're healthy, they don't need to go to a doctor, but we're blessed. We like our doctor/pediatrician.
We bring I thought the kids you were going to say we like our daughter.
Oh, well, you're damn right we do. She's a lovely little lady. But taking her to her checkup, no concerns. But we still do that. And because they don't push vaccines or whatever, it's just like, you know, little make sure that the, you know, the check marks are checked and things look good. A double or a second opinion on what we know is already true. Anyway, we do that. Perhaps you should think about it if you haven't taken your kids in for a checkup because the insurance almost always covers it, whatever you're on, or you have a little copay, unless you are severely anti-doctor and anti-medical industry, which in some cases is warranted. I understand if you get a crap doctor, I wouldn't want to bring one of the kids into that either. Anyway, that's all from us here this week, fam. Thank you for riding with us here. Yeah. Pretty good. We didn't cancel the show. Our 5-year anniversary is technically will be our next show. I don't know if we'll cook up a spectacular and bring in a bunch of guests or we'll just do something regular to be determined. We got to get this one up on what's tomorrow? Monday. Anyway, so from all of us at Full House, thank you, Sam. Thank you in particular to your wonderful son and his new wife. Really appreciate you volunteering that up and them being good sports about it. More than good sports. Yep. Rolo, thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
All right. Let's get this puppy up on Monday. We love you, fam. We'll talk to you next week. Sam, DJ Booth is over to you. Second straight week. Make it count, big guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is a wonderful song, Stronger Than You Think You Are. It's by a fella. He's calling himself in this video. He calls himself Paul Runewood, but he is the same guy who was known as Paul Burnley from England. He was famously in the band No Remorse, as well as several other projects. And that's not even his real name either. So, but he's, and if you think of it, maybe Coach post in the show notes the actual link to the video. The video is really good too. And it's a song I find particularly touching and encouraging, and I hope the listeners will as well.
Good stuff, Sam. Thank you, baby. We love you, fam. We'll talk to you next week. Rolo, it's all yours.
See ya.
See ya.
Don't forget your ancestry. The bravest man to work the sea. The women folk who held their own. It's all within your blood and bone. That defused the bombs, held the nerve while others run, see in the sky their glory days, is all within your DNA. You're stronger than you think you are. You're brighter than a shooting star. It's not easy being my son, with all the things that I have done. But I know you're going to make your own way through. I'm so proud of you. Struggles come and struggle goes. And in your heart, you will know.
In your heart.
Things that really matter more.
The things that really matter more.
You'll feel it,
you'll
deep,
feel it
right within your very core.
Your very core. Stronger than you think you are. You're brighter than a shooting star. The bond we share invincible.
As I see your steel, stand your ground while others kneel. Cool head will not betray your rage. History's yours, go write your page.